it's very evident. Teams play the Leafs. They set up the game for the Leafs to beat themselves. And I thought we did that in game 3 and 4. We beat ourselves with how we played at home.
Welcome to 32 Thoughts, the podcast presented by the GMC Sierra Elevation. Lots to get to today, but the story from the weekend, which will bleed into the week and will bleed into the weeks and months to come, Elliot. The Maple Leafs lose 2-1 in overtime. David Pastrnak with the overtime heroics. It's a game 7. It's Boston. It's Saturday night. And now the Maple Leafs are out, again after losing to the Boston Bruins in 7. Whether it's Pelly, whether it's Shanahan, whether it's Tree Living, whether it's Keefe, whether it's the players, what is next?
Well, I do think there's going to be changes. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the biggest question is, how deep do they go and what is the timeline of it? Jeff, one of the things I really think is crazy is that we're sitting there, we're watching Saturday night, it's going into overtime, and whether Toronto wins or Boston wins, we're thinking, okay, the team that loses here, how many people are getting fired and what changes are coming? And we're not talking about that when it comes to the team that wins and it's a game 7 overtime. But sometimes I think this is a crazy way to run organizations. But as Hyman Roth said in Godfather 2, this is the business we've chosen. And that's the way it goes. Number one, and I think this is probably the most important thing, the idea of having $40 million tied up in 4 forwards, those days are over. That the Maple Leafs are going to say that kind of roster construction is done, it doesn't work. Now, they might have to bear with it for one more year. We'll get to that. Might have to. But overall, that philosophy is done. I think this team had a likable year at the worst possible time. If we were 5 or 6 years ago and they overcame the injuries they did on defense and in goal, and they played in games 5, 6, and 7, they may have played the 3 best defensive games of their era and still lost the series. If this had happened 5 or 6 years ago, people would have been tolerant of it. But because we're at the end of this 8-year apex where they've only won 1 playoff series, nobody wants to hear about moral victories or how hard they played. And I get it. I totally understand it. You know me. I bet on talent, but I get it and I understand it. And sometimes the fact that you lose during a certain point of your franchise arc is more telling than how you lose or how you win. So we are where we are, and there are going to be changes. Well, Jeff, one thing we know now is that Keefe and the players are talking on Monday, and management isn't talking until Thursday. So we might not know about Keefe by then. Honestly, I think Keefe is a better coach than the market gives him credit for. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Keefe ends up going somewhere else and proving his critics in Toronto wrong. I think he did a good job in very difficult circumstances this year with all the injuries and everything. And this is one, and we'll bookmark it. In 3 or 4 years, we could all come back and look at this and say, Elliot was right or Elliot was wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure I'm going to hear it. But it would not surprise me at the least if he goes somewhere else and does really well. But look, I do think the Maple Leafs are going to look at what else is out there. You'll remember going back last summer, before they committed to Keefe and extended him, they definitely discussed alternatives. Like, if we don't bring him back or we don't extend him, who makes sense? Who would we bring in? So it's impossible to believe they don't have some ideas. It's also impossible to believe, knowing the way this organization thinks and knowing the way that they constructed their roster, especially during the season, that they haven't or wouldn't have considered someone like Berube. So one of the things that happens here is they figure out potentially what are their alternatives. The other ones that everyone's going to talk about here are going to be Shanahan and Marner. Okay. Again, Shanahan, the heat is on right now. This is going to be Keith Pelley's decision. And for me, the only question here is how much time does Pelley need to make the call? Is he keeping him or is he moving on? And Pelley has been quiet. He has done everything he can to prevent himself from being the story. And that's the question I have. What is his timetable for making this decision? Now, in addition to the timetable, I had someone say to me, well, if they remove Shanahan, who replaces him? Honestly, I'm not sure that's the question to ask because I'm not convinced anymore that ownership wants that kind of layer of management. I don't necessarily believe they want a president of hockey operations anymore. Pelley is the active Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment president, and it's possible that that layer is eliminated and not replaced, and the general manager, Tree Living, simply reports to him. Now, Marner, I think the thing there is going to be this. Yes, he has control over the situation with his no-move clause, but I think there's a couple of questions here. Number one, how does he feel? Has he gotten to a point where he thinks long-term it's just better for him to be somewhere else? He was tentative. He was nervous during these playoffs. You could see it. Matthews had his moments. Nylander had his moments after he came back. Tavares had a big moment in the Game 5 overtime winner in Boston. Marner never really had a moment. And now because of where we are in the calendar of his contract, that becomes white hot under the microscope. And to me, the number one question is, what does he think? Does any part of him think that it's time? Now, you have to always be careful with this because we're 24 to 48 hours after the emotion of a tough defeat. But I do think it's possible that he will think about it. It doesn't mean that he comes right out and tells the Leafs, get me out of here. But I do think at least there will be a Marner collective, as in the people around him, conversation about maybe is it better to go somewhere else. Now, I don't know if he's going to say that publicly. It's probably not in his best interest to say that publicly, but I do think on some level, like especially the people who represent him, you're not doing your job if you don't at least say, Mitch, would this be better for you? Now, number two part of that equation is the organization. Do they think it's time? Because yes, while Marner has the power of the no move clause, the Maple Leafs' power is to say, look, we're not offering you what you want. We're not even sure that, and they could go full bore scorched earth. They could say, not only are we not offering you what we want, what you want, but we're thinking that maybe it's better if we just use the cap room. And then and they can say, if you don't want to play ball with us, that's fine. We can play it out next year. But what it means is you're not going to get your extension here and you're not going to get the eighth year. That's what Toronto can do, if that's what they want to do. Because people are saying there's nothing the Maple Leafs can do. That's not true. They don't have the hammer, but they have something, and it's that. So they can kind of force the situation and say, look, guys, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to handle it. And you can decide to work with us now, or you can decide to make your decision later. They can do that. The kind of same thing happened with Nylander, but Nylander played so well, he convinced them to keep them. So I think that's kind of where we are right now. I think they also have to make decisions in goal. I've got to think that I wonder how Samsonov feels. He started, he got pulled. They made the right decision, but maybe he's going to say, I want to go somewhere else. And with Wall, even though he's really talented, they have to be asking themselves, is he ever going to be healthy? Are we concerned about his health? So they're going to have to consider what they're going to do in goal. They're going to have to consider what they're going to do with their core four. You know, Nyes obviously took a huge step. They've got a couple of young prospects in Minton and Cowan that had really good years. Are they going to be ready next year? Or do they still need some AHL seasoning? They've got some cap room. They've got to decide what they want to do on their defense. You know, maybe they weren't great puck movers, but those guys played really hard. And like I said, those were three of Toronto's best defensive games they've played with this group. It's going to be interesting, you know, are they going to try to extend McCabe? I heard in addition to how he played, the organization loves him behind the scenes, especially when they went down 3-1. A lot of the attitude came from him, the pride within the team, the pride in his teammates, the us against the world mentality that would make Pat Quinn proud. Quinn was the king of us against the world. And I wouldn't be surprised if they look at him and say, what can we do here? Are they going to keep Joel Edmondson for another year? They've already extended Benoit. Like, they have some flexibility and make some and room to make some decisions, but I definitely believe there's going to be change. And I think the most fascinating one is, you know, what does Marner decide? And depending on his decision, what do they say to him?
Okay, so a couple of things there, and just rewinding quickly to the blue line. Safe to say, TJ Brody, Mark Giordano, who, by the way, for the longest time in Calgary, were a fantastic pair together, maybe the best pair in the NHL.
Yeah,
I think that's the end of those two players with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think we wonder about Max Domi, who's on the 1-year deal, Tyler Bertuzzi, who's on the 1-year deal as well.
Yes.
Listen, Max Domi, when you talk about, you know, one man's injury is another man's opportunity, as you always like to say, Max Domi fit in there hand to glove and I think really distinguished himself. I don't know what the situation is on Tyler Bertuzzi. Do the Leafs want him to stay? Does he want to stay? I don't know the answer to any of it. I do wonder, like you do, about Joel Edmondson. I thought he had a really good playoffs for the Maple Leafs, albeit brief, 7 games. And I think we'll take away from this series that hit on David Pastrnak specifically. But you're right. Jake McCabe became the guy on that blue line. And they have him for one more year at a very, very discounted price of $2 million. I do very much wonder what happens there. But getting back to Bertuzzi and Domi and these types of players, one of the interesting things through all of this, Elliot, and this is not my point, this is a point that's been made in countless other places, but the lion's share of money is occupied between Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and John Tavares. Yet the issue continues to remain, not defending, but scoring goals here. The issue here is you're done with John Tavares's $11 million cap hit after next season. Either John Tavares goes back to the Maple Leafs on a reduced rate, or he's just not back with the Maple Leafs at all. So if you're making a decision on Mitch Marner, you find yourself in a situation where, and again, I'm the guy that keeps reminding everybody the cap space is a thing. Cap space is a commodity. No one's
walking
for
nothing. We're going to talk about that in a second.
Nothing. But are you in a situation where, okay, we need to make a decision on one when really in a year it's going to be a decision on two?
Yeah, I understand your point, Jeff, but I just don't think you can run it back anymore.
Oh, I'm not saying run it back. I'm just saying, like, does this complicate anything at all?
No. Whatever decisions you're making now are about your roster, and you can only make the decisions in the order that you contractually can do them, right? So you can't worry about Tavares in a year. I mean, you can use it to plan for your cap, but, you know, someone said to me, if they really wanted to send a message, I mean, really wanted to send a message, what they could do is they could buy out Tavares. Now, from a salary cap point of view, it doesn't make a lot of sense. His salary is almost all bonuses, and bonuses are guaranteed. They're not affected by a buyout. So next year, instead of paying, having an $11 million cap hit, it would be like 10.4. And the year after, you know, you'd have a $300,000 cap hit. So it really doesn't change your cap picture a lot, but boy, would it send shockwaves through your roster. Now, the question is, now I would say this. I think there are GMs in the league that would absolutely consider that. I am just not convinced that the Maple Leafs are going to do that. Like, Tavares still has very useful moments as a player. So, but it was just interesting that someone presented this to me. The thing with Marner is, you know, Jeff, and it goes to what you said there. I was thinking about this. With Nylander, they were not willing to lose the trade. If they were going to make that deal last summer, they were not willing to lose the trade. They set a bar. They said, if we're trading him, we're getting this, a top defender that makes a difference. If they really want to change their mix, they have to consider the possibility, especially since Marner can decide where he wants to go. They have to consider the possibility they make the deal and they look like they lose it and say, okay, we're going to do this, but we're going to do it not for this trade, but to give us the flexibility to do other things. Now, you know, when you mentioned Bertuzzi and Domi, when Bertuzzi was signed, the Maple Leafs discussed a longer-term deal, but it couldn't work, so they said, let's do 1 year and see how it goes. Now, there have been some rumors around that he kind of has the Ryan O'Reilly vibe, that he doesn't like all the scrutiny and attention in Toronto. I think there is some truth to that, but from what I've heard, it doesn't necessarily mean he's against re-signing. I've heard actually he really enjoyed part of the group. He likes his teammates and he's interested in staying. And I believe the team is interested in having him back. As always, though, it comes down to contract. What are the Maple Leafs willing to do? What is he willing to take? But I don't think it's an absolute no on Bertuzzi. I think Domi wants to stay. I think it's going to come down to negotiations because you know that, you know, Domi's still pretty young. He's going to want some term. And I'm just curious to see how the Maple Leafs are going to feel about that. But I would be shocked if Domi didn't want to stay. This was a really good fit for him. And I simply think it comes down to contract negotiations.
You know, I know off the top you talked about what's next by way of decisions, but also timeline as well. Look, we've seen teams make decisions quickly after the season is over. And I think that if you've made your decision on someone like your coach, you probably do it sooner than later for everybody's yep. sanity involved, certainly the coach. How wild a week do you think it's going to be around Leafland? Like it always is, like the volume.
I think it's going to be a busy summer. I think it's going to be a busy summer because I think there's a lot of decisions to be made.
And is this going to be a busy week though?
Like,
It'll be newsy because anytime a Maple Leaf says anything, it's newsworthy. But is it going to be actual news? You think
it's going to be nuts, Jeff? Since there's no management talking until Thursday, it's going to be 96 crazy hours. But as someone said to me, you're going to be busy chasing the Maple Leafs around all summer, so you might as well start now.
Elliot, anything else on the Maple Leafs before we move on?
Yeah, a couple things I was spitballing. You know, one of the players I was thinking about potentially for them, I was wondering about a guy like Seth Jones. If Chicago is going to keep losing, I wonder how Jones feels. Now, I know his analytic numbers haven't been great, but I'm curious to see how he would feel about them and they would feel about him. I'm not, you know, Jones has kind of indicated that I don't think losing is very easy on him, so we'll see. And if it's not someone like Seth Jones, Like, I think this, if they do make a Marner trade, maybe they don't get, as we talk about, maybe they don't, quote unquote, win the trade and get a stud defenseman in return. But I would think a defenseman would be part of that package, someone they think that could play for them. And also, you have to think if players like Brett Pesce or Brandon Montour hit the market, those kinds of players, Toronto's going to be in the mix for them. So that's number one. That's one thing I was thinking about. I'm enjoying profane Willie Nylander a little bit here, swearing in every interview.
Yeah.
And, you know, the final thing, and I know some Leaf friend fans of mine, they said it was the final kick in an area where it hurts when they heard Jim Montgomery say that Mike Babcock gave him advice going into game number 7.
Yeah, that's a...
You could tell that Montgomery was pretty happy to deliver that note.
That is a kick to where you are most a man, Elliot, to where you are most a man. Yeah, that was a tough one for Maple Leafs fans. It was a tough weekend for Maple Leafs fans, certainly. Anything else new with Craig Berube? We mentioned him when we just talked about the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned on Friday that he was considered high on Ottawa and New Jersey's list. I had some people tell me they don't think it's going to be Ottawa. Now, again, I'm not saying that means it's going to be definitely Jersey, because I think Toronto may weigh in on this. But I had a few people tell me it's don't hit your wagon to Berube and the Senators. That's in coaching circles, that seems to have died down. I know some people think that Travis Green has a real shot there, but I like, you know, Ottawa's list, they've interviewed a lot of people, so, you know, we'll see where that goes.
Okay, Elliot, Sunday night, huge game. The Vegas Golden Knights, defending Stanley Cup champions, are out. There will be a new Stanley Cup champion. Dallas wins 2-1, and the legend of Wyatt Johnston grows. He scores his fourth goal of the postseason. Radek Faksa with the game winner. Interestingly enough, that's a player that at various times Vegas has been interested in.
Yes.
Dallas has always held on to, and he's one of Peter DeBoer's favorites and paid off big for the Dallas Stars on Sunday night. And I'll tell you, like, Dallas went at this game hard, and there was one player they seemed to have in their sights, and that was Mark Stone. We saw Thomas Harley cross-checking Stone in the back. We saw Matt Duchene in the third period get a real good lick in on Mark Stone at all. One thing we do have to mention here is Jake Oettinger. He was fantastic.
Yes.
After that first game, he was tremendous. And there'll be a new Stanley Cup champion as the Dallas Stars will now face off against the Avalanche. What did you make of Game 7? That was a fun one.
Major credit to Jake Oettinger, Jeff. You mentioned how good he was after the first game. Remember, going into the playoffs, there were a lot of people who thought that he was their Achilles heel in Dallas. That if Dallas was going to lose early, it wasn't only going to be because of going up against Vegas. It was going to be because Oettinger just hasn't been good enough this year. And if you take a look at his stats from the third period and overtime in these games, the numbers were exceptional. So all the credit in the world to him. A year ago, he disappointed me because he made fun of my golf swing when we shot the Joe Pavelski piece, but he did nothing in the first round that disappointed me at all. He was excellent. And, you know, even though what did Dallas do to deserve this? Out of the frying pan, into the fire, Vegas round one, Colorado round two. If Oettinger plays like that, Dallas is going to be confident, as good as the Avalanche are. They are going to be very confident. Johnston, you said, a star is born. It's not Barbara Streisand. It's not Lady Gaga. It's Wyatt Johnston. And in Game 7, they moved him up to the first line. They moved Pavelski down. They put Johnston up, and he rewarded them with a goal. And, you know, some players, they just are opportunists. They're always in the right place. They have a nose for scoring. They're not afraid of the moment. Wyatt Johnston is that guy. And I don't know what there really is else to say, Jeff, aside from that series deserved to go 7 games. one team that could win the Stanley Cup was going out in this series. It was as even as you could expect it to be. And whoever was going to win that series was really going to earn it. Really going to earn it. And the Stars earned it. And would anybody have been surprised if the Golden Knights would have scored there in the last minute and put us into overtime? As a matter of fact, I was almost surprised they didn't.
There was that one shot from the point with the Ottinger glove save that I thought had a chance. I'm like, here we go.
Because it was a clean look, too. I thought that went in because you couldn't see Ottinger behind the screen on TV. Like he was in a place, or you couldn't see his glove. And the crowd kind of got up for a second. So, you know, you forget for a second you're watching a game in Dallas as opposed to Vegas, and you think, oh, the crowd's standing, the puck's in the net. And then you realize they were standing and applauding because he made the save. For half a second there, because I couldn't see the glove and the way the crowd reacted, I actually thought the puck was in.
So, Peter DeBoer is now 8-0 in game sevens. And because I know how much you love it when I put you on the spot, what other significant record in hockey, not necessarily the NHL, does he continue to hold?
Most teams taken to the second round, most different teams taken to the second round of the playoffs?
No, I'm going to get you off this fishing trip here. 2008 Kitchener Rangers.
Oh my God.
Was the last team to win their league championship and host the Memorial Cup. They were the last team to go through the front door. Head coach of that team, Peter DeBoer, as Saginaw bowed out to London in the OHL.
That's not even real trivia question.
Sure it is. Who's the last team to go in the Memorial Cup in the front door? It's a good one, too. Come on.
Completely irrelevant to what we're discussing.
It's Peter
DeBoer. Okay.
We're talking about Peter DeBoer.
Completely irrelevant to what we're discussing here.
All right, I figured fine.
It's because, you know, for example, he's taken, what, two different teams to the Stanley Cup final? And then I realized Scotty Bowman took, like, eight teams to the Stanley Cup final. So that would be that's a terrible answer by me. Even though I wasn't even close to the question, it's just a terrible trivia guess by me.
I just thought you were just filibustering until I would jump in and just finally say, okay, I was testing everyone's patience.
Embarrassingly poor.
Now,
yes.
Now, that's okay. A mediocre man is always at his best. The question becomes, what happens to Vegas now? Like, we know that Vegas takes the summer to clean up their cap.
Yep.
That's the way they do business.
Yep.
We're going to make a big mess in the regular season, and we don't care because we're cleaning it up in the summer. So what now? There's a Marchessault. There's a Stevenson. There's a Martinez. We'll see what happens there. What happens with Vegas now?
Well, Hanifin's already done, so we know that that's one of their biggest pieces of business. I've heard in Marchessault's case, the biggest issue is term. He's 33 years old. He's going to be 34 in December. He scored 42 goals this year, Jeff. And I thought he was very dangerous in the playoffs, including in game number 7. This is still a guy who is near the top of his game. And also, don't forget, he really didn't become an NHL regular until he was 27. There's an argument to be made that the mileage on him is not as great as the mileage on other 34-year-olds. Vegas is an analytically inclined organization. They do take numbers into the equation, aging curves, all that stuff. I've just heard that, unless it's changed recently, and it may have, it happens from time to time, they were really having a difficult time, these two sides, to find a term that made a lot of sense. To me, Marchessault is a huge part of the soul of the team. Of course, he's one of the original misfits. He was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner last year when they won the Stanley Cup. I do think the Golden Knights would very much like to keep him. But to this point, there's a limit in what they were willing to do. And I heard after the trade deadline, not like they were going to trade him anyway, but I heard after the trade deadline, the two sides were really struggling to get there. So we'll see if that changes at all. Stevenson just turned 30. From what I heard in his case, the Golden Knights were willing to do longer term. Like, I don't know if it was willing to go up to 8 years, but I heard it was significant term. So when someone, when people tell me significant term without saying 8 years, we're talking like 6 or 7 years. But I think the issue there with Stevenson, as I heard, was that the longer the term went, the less number I think the Golden Knights are willing to do. So it's not like they were offering them like 6 years at $2 million a year, but it was six years at a slightly lower number than maybe they would have done for 4 or 5 years. And so again, it's been difficult for them to get to the exact sweet spot, unless, of course, something's changed in the last few days that I'm not aware of. I think the thing about this that Vegas has a big challenge with is Stevenson in particular is a top center. And, you know, Vegas has Eichel. Eichel signed for 2 more years and Carlson signed for 3 more years. And they've just traded for Hurdle, obviously, who signed with a lot of term. They're pretty set down the middle if they want to be. Like, to me, them going out and getting Hurdle is at least an admission that they knew they might not be able to keep Stevenson, and that's a plan there in case he leaves. Now, if they can make it work, maybe they can move some of these bodies around, some of these guys can play wing, whatever. But to me, them going out and getting Hurdle is at least an admission that they know that there's a possibility Stevenson's going to leave, because a center like him getting on the market, they're going to be 20 teams after this guy. I have no doubt that that's the case.
One other name we should throw out there, as far as being a topic for future, is William Carey.
Yeah.
Is there a future there?
I haven't heard as much about Carrier. And again, you know, he's 29 years old and he's making $1.4 million. The one thing that someone did say to me is that Carrier is probably in his best position to hit it big as he has in his entire career. And they could see a situation where Vegas simply can't match what other teams can do. We'll see. He's another great player for them. Martinez, I know people have wondered if he's going to be retiring. His body has been through an awful lot. I mean, that guy's had a hell of a career. Stanley Cup champion, Stanley Cup winning goal. Just a great, great career. He's 36 years old. I do think people have wondered if he will end up retiring.
Never a dull moment in Vegas. This offseason should be.
But you know what, Jeff? Like, you know, they're going to be aggressive. They're going to be mad that they lost. They're going to be super mad that they lost. And everybody's out there saying, good, I'm glad Vegas didn't win. And it's going to have them mad. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, you think that's fine? You think that's good? Well, where do you see what we pull next? And that's what they're going to do. They're going to aim to come back and do what they couldn't do this year, which was advance deeper into the playoffs. Like, this is an organization that's not satisfied with the one Stanley Cup. They want more. And you know, like, regardless of how you feel about what happened this year with Mark Stone and them acquiring Hanifin and them acquiring Mantha and them making all the moves they made, they're going to look at everybody and say, you may think you won this round, but we're far from done and we're coming back to win again and soon.
Can I add one more thought to the Mark Stone conversation?
Sure.
Here? For anyone that doesn't think he was hurt, do you think we really saw Mark Stone in this series? I'm watching Mark Stone out there and saying, that's not the Mark Stone that we're used to at all. Like, did you not look at Mark Stone and say, this guy's not 100%?
You know what, Jeff? That's a really interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that too much. He scored 3 goals. But, you know, the one thing for me about Stone is, well, first of all, he wasn't as dominant as he usually is. I don't doubt that at all. I think you're right. He didn't, like, to me, Marchessault made a real impact. Eichel made a real impact. Stone didn't make the impact that I normally expect from him. And he did look like he was hurt in game seven. He got hurt on one play. But for me, sometimes it's always been tough to tell because his game is not based on speed. It's based on guile and skill and his great stick. And sometimes I find it harder to tell if a guy is as effective when, like, when someone's speed is someone's game. They're not themselves. So sometimes I find it harder to tell with him. What do you think?
I just think that he was, whether it was the injury, the lack of playing time, all of it. Like the whole time all this controversy was going on about, oh, cap circumvention, I'm saying they don't have the player in the lineup. Do you really want to sit a player out that long just to spring him into the playoffs? Like sometimes that'll work. Kucherov, Kane, sometimes that won't. And it's a really dangerous game to play. And I looked at Stone in this series and I said, to your point, so much of what he does is based on intelligence and body positioning and making the right play and just flat out being smarter than everybody. He's not going to burn anybody. He's not going to blow by guys wide and cut to the net. That's not going to be his game. I just didn't see it consistently in that first round. And my takeaway from it is, he's still not 100%. So for anyone that thinks that, I don't know, the Vegas Golden Knights were milking it or Mark Stone was milking it, they didn't have the player for all that time. And I don't think they had 100% of Mark Stone when he got there at all. Elliot, I think a lot of people are wondering about the New York Islanders and what can be done about this roster. Is one of the questions about the New York Islanders, however, the future of Lou there?
Well, now we know the answer. He came out during his media conference with Patrick Waugh and said, you know, we're coming back. And you'll remember the last time when that happened with Gar Snow and Doug Waite, and they said they were coming back, and the Islanders made a change after that because they hadn't actually made the decision when that was said. My knowledge of Lou Lamoriello indicates to me that he's not making that announcement unless he knows. And so I don't expect the craziness that followed the previous case. I can't say I'm hugely surprised because, you know, first of all, we just don't know his contract situation. The only thing that surprised me a little bit about it, and only a little bit, is I do think in league circles, it's kind of known that the Islanders are, especially now that they've moved into a new building, which has a lot of potential, and they've done some really interesting things to improve the fan experience in and around that building. They got the All-Star game next year. There was a lot of talk about them, for lack of a better term, modernizing the way they do things, improving the way they think. And it I think it's silly to say that Lou Lamoriello is not willing to think of new things, because I don't believe that's true. He has an old school approach, but the guy isn't dumb. Is that I think they kind of talked about, are there even more ways we can do that with our hockey department? And, you know, so I'm still wondering, even though he said that, you know, he's coming back, it doesn't mean that their main, like, is he going to add anyone? What are they going to look like in terms of the way they build out their front office? And if anything, and, you know, because we were mentioned on one of the last pods, you know, people were saying, like, if Mark Hunter's going somewhere, what are the chances it's to go work with his old buddy Lou Lamoriello? So we'll see how that all plays out. I'm not... like I said, I'm not surprised, but I do think they have talked about improving some of the ways they do things. A lot of the Islanders' best players are locked up and have protection. And to be honest, you're not looking to trade like a Noah Dobson or a Matt Barzal or a Bo Horvat or any of those guys anyway. The thing I really think they have to do is they need to get a score. We've talked about this a billion times. They need an infusion of youth, like, just around the organization. Like, right now, they just don't have enough people pushing for jobs. And that is something they really need to improve on, is just the amount of young players. Like, we just talked about Toronto. they have, you know, Minton and Cowan coming now, and they're going to be pushing for jobs. The Islanders don't have those guys, and they need to start finding more of those guys. And, you know, to me, you know, one of the other decisions they've got to make. Now, remember, last time they didn't sign Brock Nelson until just until after they finished their season, his UFA year. So they don't really seem to be too worried about waiting. That's but, you know. Yes, you could get a lot for Nelson in a trade. There's no question. However, I also look at it this way. Brock Nelson loves the Islanders and cares a lot about the Islanders. And he's still got a lot of hockey left. If you're making that deal, you better make sure that there is a tangible benefit to making that deal. Because A, you're taking someone out who... it really cares about your team, and you're creating a big hole in your roster. So again, it's kind of like I just talked about Nylander last summer with the Leafs. Like, I guess you could do it the same way I talked about Marner. You make the trade knowing you're going to lose it potentially. But again, I don't know. I think Toronto will consider that possibility. I'm not convinced the Islanders are going to be willing to consider that possibility.
Well, one quick thought on the Islanders here, too. And as you've mentioned before, and we've talked about, the one thing the Islanders do when they identify their talent and their key piece, they lock them up long term. Noah Dobson is eligible for an extension on July 1st. He's got one more year at $4 million. I don't know what that bump looks like. I've heard as high as 8x8 for someone like Noah Dobson. Do you think Lou takes his time, or when you look at, you know, what Noah Dobson brings, which is unique to anyone else on that blue line, do they look to lock him up July 1?
Well, I think you always look to lock them up as early as possible. You know, it's the old line. Players like that never get less expensive. The price is only going up. So I'm sure they're going to be looking to lock them up right away. I mean, the Islanders have this way of, and also too, don't forget in a year, it's not like he's a UFA. He's an RFA. No, he's
with arbitration rights, yes.
Yes.
I don't think he wants it to get anywhere near there though.
No, you don't want that. You want to lock up people for as long as you can, as soon as you can. So I'm sure they will try. I have no doubt that they will try.
Nashville Predators, one of the surprise teams in the NHL. We made a lot about that blowout loss against the Dallas Stars and subsequent canceling of the U2 trip to Vegas. And that became a lot of fun and cannon fodder and a theme and all of that. Next thing you know, Andrew Burnett is up for coach of the year, and the Nashville Predators have found their way into the playoffs. They lose in six games to the Vancouver Canucks. They are out. I'm of the belief that the one thing they've been looking for the past year is the same thing they're going to keep looking for in the offseason, maybe again at the draft as well. We'll see who they dangle by way of trade bait, and that is a number one center, a good young scoring franchise type player. What's next for the Preds?
Well, first of all, I think this year was a big success for them. I don't think anybody knew what to expect. I don't think they expected a first-round playoff berth where they took a really good team to six games and had a chance to win this series. A month into the season, they were 31st in the league. There was that whole U2 thing, which quite simply I'm tired of talking about, but it could have blown up the team. They had a great year. They really did. They achieved a lot. They were a true team. And they gave Vancouver, which is no surprise, they gave Vancouver everything the Canucks could handle. And to be honest, I really think that will benefit the Canucks, that series, because that was a hard, tough series. And if you win those series, it makes you better. I thought that was a big, big win for Vancouver. I think you're totally right. I mean, they'll have a Saros decision to make. I saw some takes that, oh, this is proof that Saros can't win a round. I think that's just crazy. I really do. I think that's absolute crazy talk. You know, I think the guy is very valuable, and you always have to negotiate a contract and make someone, and two sides have to be happy. But It's going to be, and they do have a really good young prospect who's tackling people in the American Hockey League playoffs in Askarov. But, you know, I just think overall, you know what you've got in Saros. They do need scoring. They're looking for it badly. I think it was on your radio show I joked that if Stamkos was to hit free agency, Shannon McDonough would kidnap him and take him to Nashville.
Yeah,
I mean, I expect Stamkos to sign now. I really do, unless they completely lowball him. But I do think that Nashville would be a place that would be very interested, and they have tried on him before. So, but that's the kind of player, that kind of scorer, and those aren't always available, they're going to go after. But I think they sent a message this year that, as Anthony Stewart says, are you, as his father always used to say, are you a team or are you a club? And the Predators showed this year that they were a team, and I would expect them to continue to grow. The guy I think is going to be really interesting to watch next year is Novak. You know, I think he's a really talented guy. I think he struggled in the playoffs this year. I think in the long run, that will make him a better player, a greater understanding of what that is. But you look at all their players, like, you know, Evangelista got that experience. Parsonen got the last game. And I know it was a little bit of a disappointing year for him, but you don't give up on those guys too early. The interesting decision will be Carrier. What do they decide to do here? I don't think they had talked that much post deadline, but they've got a decision to make there. And he played really hard in the playoffs. I thought he was a good part of their team. So they've got some choices to make, but I think overall the Predators this year showed they are better off than I think some people, even their fans, expected.
You know, they it was interesting around trade deadline when the Nashville Predators started, you know, picking up players. As you mentioned, you know, they re-signed Tommy Novak when the Rangers were trying to relieve him from the Nashville Predators. And, you know, around deadline, here comes Jason Zucker and here comes Anthony Beauvillier. And these types of players, like I think we all know that, you know, Tyson Barrie is you know, going to be off to try to find employment elsewhere. But I do wonder about the Jason Zuckers of the world here. Do you think they come back, or this is a spot for competition at training camp?
It's a good question about Zucker. I mean, I think you have to think he's going to look for the best deal that there possibly is out there. But he is definitely the kind of player that Nashville is looking at because he's a scorer. And the thing about Zucker is that he's proven to be very adaptable to situations, right? In terms of he's now bounced around a little bit and he seems to fit in pretty well. I think that's a really good skill of his. I would assume that, you know, the Predators and him will talk. But Zucker at this point is going to look for the best deal he can get, and you can hardly blame him for that.
When you look at, and we'll close on this one, because I think a lot of the conversation around Nashville is going to focus around, as you mentioned, UC Saros, as Yaroslav Askarov just looks fantastic and ready to take that next step in his career. I think probably in a perfect world, and this is the way Nashville had already done it, when you look at the chain of goaltenders that Nashville has had, going all the way, you know, probably all the way back to Mike Dunham. They've always had, you know, the next one, the understudy, back up for a significant amount of time before handing that goaltender the reins. They're not going to get a chance to do that with Askarov unless they hang on to UC Saros for at least part of next season. Do you think that the Preds are in a hurry, if it gets them what they want, to move Saros, or can they still follow the traditional Nashville pattern of, the starring actor and the understudy? Because we've seen that from Nashville goalies for years.
That's a good question. I think in a perfect world, they would love it to be Saros Askarov.
Yep, I agree.
In a perfect world, I think they absolutely want that. But again, you've got a contract situation. And the question is, if they can't make a deal, what does Nashville feel is the best way to proceed? We'll see how they feel about the process. You know, Jeff, for me, the question is, there are some teams out there that really aren't crazy about trading for goalies at the deadline. You know, the Devils did it. They traded for two, Kakanen and Jake Allen, and it gave them a bump for a little bit. But that was more of a Hail Mary as opposed to anything else, and a free look at those guys. If you take a look at it, I remember Ryan Miller talking about how hard it was to be traded mid-season. Dwayne Roloson was a success story. He got Edmonton to the Stanley Cup final in 2006. And if this doesn't work out, maybe someone just says, look, Saros is Saros and we'll take our chances. And I could hardly blame them for that. But I mean, this is not purely Nashville's decision. Saros is going to have a hammer being 1 year out of free agency. But like I said, in a perfect world, it's Saros Askarov starting for next year. And Jeff, one last thing before we wrap up this first segment. Rob Blake is speaking Monday in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So it, I mean, we'll hear for sure, but it seems like he's going to be returning as GM. And I will tell you, I had a number of people that listened to our conversations about Dubois and said, no way they buy him out.
It's interesting. I threw this in my Fries blog on Sunday. There was one person from another team that I talked to, not LA, not Washington, who wondered if a Pierre-Luc Dubois, Darcy Kemper deal would make some sense. Unless, again, the Los Angeles Kings are still committed to making this thing work.
And Jeff, as you pointed out, his no move clause does not kick in until July 1st.
Dun, 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 dun. I wonder if he comes back as a winger. I really do.
Whatever you do, you can't come back as the same thing. You've got to say it didn't work this year. What are we going to do to make it work?
Okay, on that, we'll wrap up the segment. Coming up, preview of the next round on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to the podcast. 32 Thoughts is always brought to you by the GMC Sierra Elevation. Elliot, I am calling the series the Red Pants series, and I love it. Both the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers with those red pants on Sunday. I'm loving it. Game one is already a matter of history. And it's the Rangers that grab the 1-0 series lead. And what a game by Mika Zibanejad. I mean, that whole first period was all about Zibanejad. Maybe a little bit about Matt Rempe as well. But that first period, all about Mika Zibanejad. Your thoughts on the Rangers, the 4-3 victory, and grabbing the 1-0 series lead.
Carolina can't take any penalties. That power play is too good. You know, Carolina is going to have to stay out of the box. That was the one thing that really stood up to me. Zibanejad, he has to be a little more selfish, though. He scored twice, but he didn't shoot that one puck. Although at the end of the game, I did like the play
Brent Burns.
I did like the play he made to kill time. He could have got the hat trick. I thought that was really good, but you got to shoot that puck, Mika. No, I thought he was great. But the thing I really thought was, you don't see the Hurricanes smothered too often. And I thought the Rangers really smothered them in game number one. I think they had 30 block shots. You know, Carolina shoots from everywhere, and they weren't getting them through them until really late in the game. Obviously Zibanejad gets a lot of the credit, and the power play gets a lot of a credit, and they deserve it. But to me, I thought the Rangers played a really disciplined defensive game against a team that you have to do that to. So, you know, game one to me went about as well for the Rangers as you could hope for or expect, except that Peter Laviolette, he's going to have to make a Rempe decision because they are all over him. All over him.
You mean the officials are all over him? Because that incident with Staal, like, that is a reputation call. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That is a total reputation call. Pushed into Anderson. He got the penalty for being Matt Rempe, Elliot.
Yep.
That's what the penalty was for.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, like Canucks fans listening to this, they'll remember the Ben Eager major. that really turned that San Jose series around. And, you know, the next game, Ben Eager begged Todd McClellan to stay in. He begged him. He said, please let me play. Please let me play. And Todd McClellan said, I can't. I can't take the chance you do that again. And so when you have a reputation or you get a call like that or two, and obviously what Rempe did and that Ben Eager play are not the same. I'm just using the overall situation. Eventually a coach has to make a decision. Well, you know what? Like I can't afford these penalties. And if and obviously, like, I think the Rangers have been really supportive of Rempe this year, and I think they've done a really good job with him in terms of when you fight and when you don't, and working with him to make him a better player. I think player and team have done a really nice job here, but these are the playoffs and you cannot afford to be sentimental. And at some point in time, you know, either Laviolette's going to say, look, we're living with this or we can't live with this. And I'll tell you something else too. You watch Emily Kaplan's interview with him during the game. I don't know if there's, like, I always joke that no executive hates referees more than Steve Yzerman does. No coach hates referees more than Peter Laviolette does. And so it's going to be doubly burning him up right now because he probably doesn't think it's fair to the kid and he just hates the call in general. So he's going to have a decision to make here.
Well, and what makes it even tougher for Laviolette is this is a pretty rough game one.
Yeah. That was like, that was a mean hockey game.
Right away, like from the opening draw, like this is like these teams got at it and it was nasty. Every period had like a good dose of old school nastiness to it. So if you're Peter Laviolette, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, I understand the risk here of having Rempe in, but do I really want to disarm myself in this situation?
That's a great question.
It's a tough call. Because, you know, if Rempe's out, yeah, all of a sudden, Carolina grows that much more. And they were not shy in game one to begin with, even with Rempe in the lineup, Elliot. That is a really tough decision for Laviolette.
I think that's a great call. I got to tell you, that penalty on Tony DeAngelo and Natchez, that was weird, too.
That was a borderline.
Well, no. It was, the whole scenario was weird about how they called the penalty on Natchez. And then they said, no, it's on DeAngelo. And that's another one of those where they use the major to get it right. But the people, like, you like that, and I generally like that. But the people in the league who don't like that will look at things like this situation. They say, that's not what this is supposed to be about.
The major? I love the way they use the major.
No, but they called the penalty on one guy, and then they gave it to the other guy. Yeah. Like, to make sure it's actually a major and not a minor or something, or a no penalty, like that. But they won't like that they switched the two Carolina players.
Right. The
long
one
series.
Add in here.
Long series.
Sure. And hope it is, because that first game was a lot of fun. Like, the story coming out of it is going to be the Mika Zibanejad story, and he was great. To your point, the power play in that first period, Zibanejad and Trocheck both score. Trocheck's was a beautiful goal, again, set up by Mika Zibanejad. But Carolina did not go away. Like, right away, Zibanejad scores, Jacob Slavin comes right back. And then third period, Martin Natchez starts it off, Panarin scores a kind of questionable goal, and right away, Seth Jarvis makes it 4-3. Like, this wasn't a game where the Carolina Hurricanes were like blown out of it early with a tough first period. This is a team that didn't quit. Like, I'm with you. I think this one's going long because I still saw plenty from the Carolina Hurricanes in that game. I know Rangers grabbed it and good on them. They're going to get all the headlines. I still think Carolina looked good, had their really good spot.
This is going to be a long series.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay.
We'll finish off the pod with a couple of thoughts on the other series on the go around the NHL. Sticking with the East, because we just talked about Carolina and the New York Rangers, how about the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers? Boston, with barely any time to catch a breath, they will face the Florida Panthers. Check's notes tonight.
I don't have a problem with Boston not having time. If you win a series in five games like the Panthers did, you earn the right to the rest and the advantage that Boston didn't get. I have no issues with that. I'm under the impression that Boston was told last Thursday or before they went to Toronto for game six, that if they had won game six, they were playing Florida on Saturday night. So Boston kind of knew this anyway. I wouldn't be surprised if they start Ullmark in game one. Now, someone said to me that would be incredibly unfair to Ullmark. Incredibly unfair to Ullmark. But, you know, if you're ever...
Because it's guaranteed loss game? Is that that vibe?
That's the Joe Siv setup where he lost... Right, Toronto lost 5-0 to Ottawa on, you know, one day's rest because Pat Quinn was like, take the day off and we'll worry about game two. Yes, like they said, that's not really fair to him. No question for that reason. But if you want to give Swayman a rest, you're probably doing it now. I think Florida's a big favorite in this series. You know, Paul Maurice said Sam Bennett won't play game one, but he's now day to day, so he's not far away. You know, the Bruins, it's amazing how tight checking the playoffs have been. Really normally offensively powerful teams are having a difficult time scoring. But I still think, you know, the Bruins barely scored enough to beat the Leafs. I just don't think they're going to be able to score enough to beat the Panthers. I really don't. I think I really like this series for Florida. You know, one of the things, too, is that, you know, especially if Zacha and Coyle can't really bring Boston a lot of offense, Toronto couldn't take advantage of that, but the Panthers absolutely can. I just don't like this matchup for the Bruins. Last year's series was an all-time classic. I've learned that anything can happen, but to me, this is a tough series to see Boston winning.
This is a challenge. This is. The Florida Panthers look like a machine, Elliot. And I know the Bennett situation is a tough one, but still, this Panthers team looks like a machine. The pair in the Western Conference. We just saw the Dallas Stars, as we record this podcast, take care of the Vegas Golden Knights. So let's focus on this one. Man, should this be a great series. Dallas facing off against the Colorado Avalanche. Freach, this one has a great series written all over. Cross your fingers, it goes seven.
Another Stanley Cup final early in the playoffs, this one in round two. Dallas is going to play two Stanley Cup finals in the first two rounds of the playoffs. First one against Vegas and now Colorado. Again, I stick with my feeling, and that is from 1 to 23, Dallas is the deepest team in the NHL. And now that Ottinger is going, it makes them even more dangerous. Some of the issues that Winnipeg had, such as defending the blue line, basically preventing the Avalanche going from where they wanted to go, Dallas won't have that problem. Well, I shouldn't say that. Colorado will give them problems just because they're Colorado. They will do that to you from time to time. But Dallas is far more structurally sound to handle this and far more built better to handle this. Colorado will not be able to do to the Stars what they did to the Jets. Again, this is a 6 or 7 gamer. And the other thing I think we realize after round one is that even if Georgiev throws a stinker in there, he is capable of recovering. He showed it in round one, and we'll see how this goes. This is going to be a long series. The Stars are my team for the playoffs, but if Colorado beats them, it's no upset. I mean, I just think if Dallas keeps winning these series, are they going to get to a point where they have nothing left? Nothing left just because of the Titans that they're getting. This is going to be like, if Dallas wins the Stanley Cup, this is going to be one of the greatest runs in the history of the NHL. I was looking at this, like, because
total
round one, Vegas, round two, Colorado, round three is going to be Vancouver, Edmonton, and round four is going to be the best in the East if they get there. This could go down if they win it, if they win it as the greatest Stanley Cup run in the history of the NHL.
They'll have to have knocked off the last two Stanley Cup champions in the first two rounds. Boom, boom, Vegas, Colorado. Come on.
If I was a player on the Stars, I would be so excited for the possibility of that.
Totally. You could totally write. First of all, winning the Stanley Cup, period. Incredible achievement. That's what every hockey player dreams about doing. But if you can do it this way and knock off Stanley Cup champions along the way, Elliot, woo-hoo-hoo. Special place for you if you can pull it off.
But you know what they're going to look like at the end is William Wallace's army at the conclusion of Braveheart. That's what they're going to look like.
They're going to look like the New York Islanders after their fourth and final Stanley Cup, where they had no energy to celebrate in the room. They were all just ice packs and bruises and broken bones. That's what they'll look like. That Islanders team that won their fourth. And finally, Elliot, the series we're going to have to wait till Wednesday to enjoy. The last two teams in Canada, and after this, there will only be one in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Edmonton Oilers face off against the Vancouver Canucks. Missiles versus Arturs Shelofs.
I am concerned. The fan bases of the Oilers and Canucks will not make it until Wednesday. The stuff I am seeing going around on social media
is fantastic, yes.
Not all of it is fantastic, I have to say. But they are not going to have the energy for 72 more hours of this before we drop the puck in game number one.
I don't know.
No.
These are two committed social media groups here, Elliot. I don't think you give them enough credit.
I believe me. I'm giving them a lot of credit. They're going to be like careers ended and people canceled before this series even begins, the way this is going. But I think it's going to be a phenomenal series. Like I said earlier, I think the how hard Vancouver's series was against Nashville is going to benefit the Canucks. I don't know that we're going to see Demko in this series, so it's an even bigger challenge for Shelofs and DeSmith. You have to be so careful here. The Lightning said Sergachev not until round two. He showed up in game four. Weird things happen in the playoffs. Players push themselves in the playoffs. So when people say, oh, Demko's not going to play or Demko might play, I just say you have to be ready for anything. And the Toronto series proved it. No Nylander, Nylander. No Matthews, Matthews. No Matthews. Wool, no Wool. Like you have to be ready for anyone at any time. But they're going to start without him in goal, and that's a bigger challenge. But I think the Canucks are built to handle them in the sense that they can play with them. Again, they have to be disciplined. That power play destroyed LA. They played well against them during the regular season. They can skate with them. They can move the puck against them. They have players who can keep the puck away from them. The Oilers are going to have their moments in their games where they're going to embarrass you and they're going to make you look stupid. But Vancouver trusts their structure. If they take a lot of penalties, they're in big trouble. And the thing, like, Draisaitl has become one of the best playoff players in the league. He is, like, I don't want to say that he almost was like, there were times in the regular season this year, especially with the way he played in the first round, I kind of thought, is he's just sort of doing one of those, the playoffs are what matters years. And I don't want to say like he didn't care or he held back or whatever, but it's clear to me that the way he played in the regular season, the way he's played now, he's on another level. The Oilers have also found a way to deploy their defense a lot better. Skinner had a really good comeback in the first round. Look, they start any playoff with the two best players in the series, McDavid and Draisaitl. As good as those Canucks are, they are the two best players in the series. I just look at them, and I think this is going to be a seven-gamer, and I think Vancouver's going to give them every... Like, I saw the Sportsnet predictions where everybody was picking the Oilers. I don't know. I think this is going to be a seven-gamer, too, and I think Vancouver's going to give the Oilers everything they can handle. I think these are two tremendous teams, and it's going to be a fight for every inch.
And again, we'll have to wait to Wednesday to see game one. In the meantime, tonight, you can watch one game. The Boston Bruins facing off against the Florida Panthers as that series kicks off Tuesday. It is game two between the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers. Watch that one, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet, and Hockey Night in Canada later that night, 9:30 Eastern, the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. Oh, that's going to be so good. Get at it in game one. And that's the pod. We'll join you again first thing Wednesday morning. Enjoy the games, three until we speak again. if you're an Edmonton fan or a Vancouver fan and you're on social media, try to exhibit a little, just at least a little bit of a modicum of decency here. How about that? Just try it on for size. You might like it. Who knows? We'll talk to you again Wednesday.